One baby lives, and it's her destiny. So take a drink. We've got the Law of Surprise coming up next on The Witcher as we discuss Season 1, Episode 4.
I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz
cheers. Sweet. Hey, everybody. Let's all take a drink to destiny. My name is Rachel Goodman. We're here with Witcher as we discuss bastards, banquets, and burials. Yes, yay. As Ryan in the booth has said, that is a tongue twister. We have Ben the Witcher.
Hello.
We've got Olivia,
nice to be here.
The sorceress.
Cheers.
And Katie the cleric.
Hi, everyone.
Yeah, so what an episode. Before we dive in, be sure to stay tuned until the end. We're going to do our spotlight on production as well as our news segment. So yeah, stick around for that. Let's dive right in. Overall thoughts on this episode?
I just think they keep getting better and better. I don't know. This episode was, I loved because, I'll talk about it later, but how she was in so many different places around the world, and we can finally see Yennefer as, you know, the witch that she is, the mage that she is, so I thought that was really cool.
I also wanted to say, I love the show, I love this episode specifically, because Yaskia, the funny guy, Yaskia, right?
Yeah,
I mean, this guy's stealing the show, come on.
He's literally so the best.
He is my favorite.
Yeah. He just has to say, toss a coin, and we all know him.
I love it.
He's great.
He's so good.
For me, I thought the pacing was much better than episode 3. I like this one a lot better. And I'm a huge fan of fairy tales. And so I love that this show is kind of giving me like Grimm's fairy tale vibes and stuff. So you're getting kind of like the darker versions of fairy tales, but reimagined in a different way. And so I really like that. So like in this one, we kind of had like the whole Beauty and the Beast story. And it's very similar to the story. It's different than the story in the book, but similar, like, you know, I know we'll talk about that more later. But so I like that they kind of have those different stories, like the one with Renfri originally was like Snow White in the book. I do like that element, just because when you think of fantasy, to me, I also think of fairy tales, like they are one and the same, but they can exist in different ways and different interpretations. And I love that. I love that we get to see different people and their spin on things.
Absolutely. So I think that that's a great way to start too. We could touch on everything that happened with the eventual birth of Princess Cirilla, which was a crazy twist. But as Katie was saying too, I want to read like a little tiny excerpt from The Last Wish, because it does have a lot to do with what we saw in this episode and everything with true love. So I'm just going to read it really fast and then we're going to dive right in. So the excerpt, it's from Chapter 2 in The Last Wish. Nelvin kept touching his face with his free hand. Incredible, Geralt, after so many years, how's it possible? There's a grain of truth in every fairy tale, said the Witcher quietly. Love and blood, they both possess a mighty power. That what, Geralt? It has to be true love. Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about everything going on in Cintra when we first kind of step in and we see that Geralt is like forced into sort of accompanying the bard.
Man, the bard, he literally is, like we were saying, he makes this entire show. He's just the coolest guy. Really quickly, in the chat, hi everyone again. Ivan Soto, this episode was way better than number 3. Grayson says, I love the bromance between Jaskier and Geralt. And Spiro says, this is an amazing episode. Still episode 2 might be a bit better, but this is definitely rates as one of the best.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just wanted to throw
in
the chat.
And our lovely bard is on the screen for
look
us viewers.
It.
And obviously they did that on purpose, putting him in the show. I think he's a great contrast to Geralt, you know, so I like that.
And I felt like it was a moment of worlds collide, because we see that we see that Calanthe, she is about the age, I mean, she's obviously a little bit, like maybe 10 years younger or 15, however old Princess Cirilla is when we first see her. She looks about the same age that we have been introduced to her with. And so seeing her and seeing Geralt walk into this castle and seeing that Musak actually knows him, it was crazy to me. I was like, okay, now everything's making sense. At first, what I thought that where they were going with this was that they were going to say that he was actually Princess Cirilla's father somehow.
Yes.
That's the direction that that's where my mind went. But then very quickly we realized that was not the case.
Yeah.
So I, at first, like, I didn't see, I saw this being really bad for The Witcher and for Calanthe, and I just kind of assumed that we were actually going to dislike her even more than we already did.
Yes.
That is where, you know, that's how I was starting to feel about her, and that, you know, last episode, Ben, you were talking about how we keep seeing Geralt's character.
Yeah.
We just keep learning more about him, and we're put in a position where we actually are, I'm respecting him a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
And this was one of those circumstances where he saw that Dunny came in and that they, you know, everybody, the queen had ordered him to die. And Geralt actually stood his ground and said, no, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, I feel that made him very human, you know.
Yeah.
That he shows me every time when I watch him how he's behaving and how he's changing his facial expressions. Man, this guy has so many emotions and feelings, so I would love to hear more about his backstory because we don't really know exactly where he's coming from yet, right?
Right.
So I'd like to learn more about him, so hopefully we're going to find out more about that, you know.
Yeah, me too. When it comes to him, I was like, man, every episode we just get more and more like humanity.
Yeah.
Humanity?
Yeah. Meh?
Of him.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, he's technically not, but it's just like, well, this is, you know, it's starting to come out and it just makes you love him so much more, you know.
So not just the looks,
it's
right?
It's not just, okay, it's like 90% gay.
And so, sorry. Katie, what did you make of all of it, especially knowing that we've both read that the differences in the book, which are essentially that... you know, with the book, it wasn't really about this guy loving a princess and being a good person and a curse in that way. It was, you know, this guy in the book who's actually kind of a monster on the inside. So this was a different take on it.
It was definitely a different take on it because literally when I was reading the book, I honestly was like, he's just rambling on for 10 pages and I kind of don't like this guy at all because he just doesn't sound like a good person. Like, he totally deserves this ailment, and I hate thinking that a character deserves or a person deserves something because it makes you feel so bad inside, but I just remembered, like, he kind of had it coming.
Yeah.
But I do like that they chose to change that scene for the show because of the fact that it was so hard to just get lost in all this extra story and all his extra rambling. So I'm happy that they decided to be like, okay, we're going to take bits and pieces of this story in the book and change it so it's more watchable and it's more able to stay tuned. Because I don't think I would have enjoyed it had they kept it as true to the book in that sense. Because, like I said, you got it with the pacing on a show, it's so much different than the pacing in a book.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And with Pavetta, too, I appreciated the love story there.
Yeah.
And I appreciated, like, in this world, there's a lot of, you know, darker fairy tale aspects to it. Mm-hmm. And to see something that feels pure like this, where it's actually true love and it feels like, okay, we're rooting for them. We want them to be together. I also appreciated that once we did see, you know, they were about to kill Dunny. And I thought that was a cheap shot on Calanthe's part.
Yeah.
That I was like, okay, what is she doing? Like, her daughter is never going to forgive her. This is where it's all starting. And it was, again, this whole idea of destiny. And how people are going to, you know, things like the destiny of Syntra is all based upon what they do and their actions and honoring codes and this whole thing of honor and, you know, this law of surprise. And Olivia, we were talking about what that meant. Did you want to share again in case anyone's watching who's a little bit confused about that?
Well, so I was a little bit confused, but it's basically if you save someone's life or you owe, you know, you have a debt to someone or whatever, you can give them the law of surprise, which basically means that, you know, you owe them something and you might not know what it is now and they might not know what it is now, but it's going to be something good and it's going to be something in the future.
Yeah.
And they have, they, according to destiny, they have to have it or else, like, as you see, like, everything starts to crumble and everything goes, like, so many things can go poorly.
Yeah.
So you have to honor it.
So, and the interesting thing was we saw where Princess Cirilla got her powers from.
Yeah.
And Calanthe admitted that it was actually her grandmother, I guess her mother and then Pavetta's grandmother who had the same power.
Yeah.
So we see all of this. We see that eventually things do work out for the couple,
eventually.
But then Geralt, in a moment that I kind of thought was very comedic.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, like, okay, I guess I'll enact the law of surprise. No biggie. I'm never coming back.
And then he's like,
1 second later, she got sick.
And then he was like, and then he was like, are you are you pregnant?
And I love how they knew.
Yeah.
Like, the, she couldn't be throwing up because she just dealt with this, you know, very...
Yeah,
that's his face.
Isn't that, like he cursed at that part, didn't he? Like, yeah. He was like, well, I figured it out now.
The comedic timing in this moment was hilarious because it was just, like, everything happened and then right in that moment he was like, beep. And it was like, he knew, like, man, I'm going to have this kid now. This kid is going to be mine. And that sucks.
And he didn't even believe in any of this. Yeah. That was the whole thing. And then suddenly, like, I don't even think that he, I think at the very end, he still didn't believe. And that when Musak was saying, you know, you're going to be tied to this child forever.
Yeah.
He was like, yeah, no, I'm not. Watch what happens. You guys will be fine.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we all know that it doesn't end up fine. Yeah. No. So.
What's also interesting, what you mentioned, is that Mausak and the witch, Geralt, they know each other already, like the old brother or whatever, right? I think because Mausak has also these kind of superpowers, right, where you can just have a shield or create a shield or something like that. And Geralt can do exactly the same thing. So I have a feeling that they probably come from the same tribe. And I'm just saying maybe Mausak is even a witcher himself.
Oh, could be.
Could be.
I mean, could be. I don't know.
Well, another reason with the destiny thing is he wasn't even supposed to be there. He was there because of the bar.
Exactly.
So it even plays more into that whole thing. Like, he was literally in the place where he was supposed to be, even though he didn't know it, because they can't mess with destiny. So
I can't do it anymore.
At the end of this episode, I'm like, I can't.
Okay. I do it for you guys at home, okay?
We're doing it for you. Really quick, in the chat, Spiro says, throwing up was one of the funniest scenes. Ivan says, the moment was out of a sitcom, honestly. And then Benny? Oh, hi, Benny. I don't know who you are.
Good name.
Says, it's not a superpower, it's magic. So, yeah.
Okay,
but
we
got this. Come on.
Yeah. Okay. Same, right? I mean,
same thing.
Yeah.
Anyways, continue.
So, all right. So we have this kind of... We have everything kind of sitting with Geralt right now, and, you know, I can just feel that it's brewing and that we're going to get to this destiny of a moment where, you know, he finds the girl in the woods.
Ryan, please stop.
Let's talk about destiny herself, no. Princess Cirilla.
Okay.
But before we do, we have an announcement to make for everybody listening and watching at home.
Well, we want to thank you guys all so much for supporting this show and all the other shows on AfterBuzz. If you guys have been paying attention, you know all of us are on other shows here, and there's so much content. And we are only here because you continue to watch and support us, and we appreciate it. But if you do like it, please subscribe to the YouTube channel and give us likes on these videos. Also, give us reviews on Apple or on YouTube, because those also help us as well. Give us those little 5-star ratings. And thank you so much again for making us the ESPN of TV Talk.
Yeah, thank you guys.
And if you guys subscribe or are new subscribers, shout it out in the chat, and then I will shout you out on the show.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
Awesome. So, let's talk about Princess Cirilla, because, you know, obviously we learned more of her backstory now, and how Geralt's involved. When we get back to her, we actually find out that she has gone into the Brokilon Forest.
Yes.
And this is where things start to get kind of, you know, they feel a little bit weird. We learn that there was something known as the Conjunction of the Spears, and there actually used to be more of these forests around, but not anymore since this conjunction. So I'm wondering what that is. We had a lot going on with Dara as well.
Yeah.
I was worried for him. I thought that was the end. Like, I thought it was like Game of Thrones style, like just quick showing someone got hit and they're done, but surprisingly no, like he's in on this with her.
I'm very surprised that Dara has made it this far. I was like, I mean, does he have more to do with her than we know? But no, he's sticking it through. And that forest is so beautiful. It's like, if I were living in that ice cold tundra and I could step into that beautiful forest, I would be there all day instead of freezing my little tuchus off, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And it did seem very peaceful and serene. But there was kind of a price for being there. We know that this forest called her, but then once she was there, the group that found her, they basically insisted that she and Dara had to drink the water. Mm. But there was this price of, yes, like, you drink from the water, the forest will determine if you are, you know, benevolent, or like, we're going to get rid of you, or, well, not or, and on top of that, if they allow you to stay, you forget your past.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That was very concerning, especially for Cirilla.
Yeah, and I'm surprised they were so willing to do it, or at least Dara was so willing to do it, you know? Like, I would be like, no, I don't want to forget my past.
Well, this is how I'm taking it with Cirilla especially. I think that she's so young, and she does have a life, but the life that, you know, she obviously had, like, most of her memories are in the castle. Mm-hmm. So I feel like for her, there is a lot of pain with how everything ended up. She's lost everybody. She's learning that everyone hates the queen or highly dislikes the queen. And then on top of that, I think she's finally getting a taste for what it's like to be out on her own and maybe getting a sense that where she comes from is a negative thing, because everyone she's meeting is saying the same thing. So I feel like for her, from her perspective, okay, you know what? I just don't care anymore. Yeah. I just don't want to be associated.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. Like a new start, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, that's but it point. Is, it, like, I'm just worried that they didn't really show the effects, because we see eventually she drinks. We saw Dara drink too, but I didn't notice anything affecting him really.
Not really. I mean, at some point I had a feeling he was kind of like a little stoned or something like that. Or something was a little different with him a couple of minutes.
Well, right? I think the main thing about drinking that was if you drank it and you weren't there with pure intent, then you would die.
Yeah.
So I think it's more of like a, you're going to drink it, he survived. And I think the rest of it is more of a light, like it kind of slowly start, your memories kind of slowly start to leave.
Yeah.
So it's not... And I don't think it's more, it's like a being high experience. I think it's more of just like slowly fading into the existence.
I almost wonder if it's kind of like Neverland with Peter Pan, where eventually it's not so much that it's an elixir that causes it or water, but it's more of the fact that you're in a place for so long, you just start to forget that anything else existed because you are in this one place and you are just, you're not letting your worries get to you anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it could be like that. We don't know quite yet.
Yeah.
Right. So that means what you are saying is basically that's kind of a proof, drinking the water, that you are pure people.
Exactly. That you're not coming to this forest to destroy it or take anything from it. You're there just out of pure of heart.
Sure.
Yeah.
Good. Kind of gives me Avatar vibes a little bit.
Yeah, that's right.
I can see that.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that's like, why... With the tree, was that what it was in Avatar?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's kind of reminding me of that.
Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely.
And that's why it didn't affect Dara, because he's an elf and he's pure of heart, and obviously Ciri too.
Yeah. So they eventually, when we get near to the end of this, they take her to the source because she's drinking the same water as Dara. It's not affecting her. I have a lot of questions about that because we know that she has this power. We don't fully understand what the power is yet. I mean, we've seen her use it. We've seen her mother use it. We've seen her mother float, too.
Yeah.
So obviously there's more to it than just, you know, having, you know, some special abilities.
Mm.
And what do you guys make of what we're seeing so far and why regular water that affected other people would not affect her?
Well, obviously, because she has power. She's just like the Witcher. Things don't affect the Witcher like they do regular humans. She's not regular human.
Yeah.
There's something very, very, very powerful about her. We don't know what it is yet, but I feel like there's something strong about her that they haven't told us, and that's why she can't, you know, nothing will affect her or something like that, I guess.
Yeah, and magic didn't affect work on Renfrey either.
Yeah.
So we're seeing this similarity where certain things don't work on people of magic, with magic abilities. So I think that's all related to it.
Yeah.
Or it's maybe also a diluted source, too, because if the water is going to be more diluted than the direct source. And so maybe because it's a weaker, that's also why it's not affecting her.
Yeah.
So.
God, you guys are smart. Damn.
I'm also thinking, too, that not that Dara's not pure, but I almost wonder if Princess Cirilla, there's even more of a purity factor to her, which makes it harder, like, you know, going beyond what her powers are. Going beyond that it's this idea of purity and okay, like we literally like are not going to be able to test this unless we are direct from the source.
Yeah.
But I just want to go back for one second. Another important conversation we had in this moment was Dara finding out that she was Princess Cirilla and the conversation. And another reason why she might have wanted to just forget, because even her friend one of the her only friend right now. Even he seemed to be angry with her, even though I felt bad for her because it's obviously not her fault. Yeah. But he was the first one to really talk about things from an elf's perspective in terms of what Cirilla's grandmother did.
Yeah.
It was almost like that she wanted to change her own identity, you know, wanted to be someone else because she felt like, oh my God, nobody likes me just from where I'm coming from right now. But it's not even my fault. But hey, what can I do? You know, that helps me.
And it's interesting because as we were seeing this, we also had kind of gone back and we saw how Calanthe was acting and we saw that she was actually referencing the elves like, eh, I wouldn't have, you know, like I wouldn't have had a problem killing them. And so we are seeing this side of her and we know that it's true, not just what Dara is saying. So it's hard to be on her side. Not that we ever really were, but it's growing even, you know, it's growing increasingly harder.
Yeah.
Now let's just talk about the last thing after Ciri does drink the water, the pure water that actually affects her. Literally all we see is that she ends up in a desert and we hear, what are you, child? Where do you think, so I'm going to ask Ben this question. Where do you think, because you haven't seen the rest of the season, right?
Not all of it, no.
Okay.
That's right.
So where do you think they're going with this?
I mean, honestly, I mean, the first thought I had is, okay, is that God or any kind of goddess or something like that talking to her, right? Asking her, hey, I see you're kind of, you look like a human being, but do you have something like magic or superpowers? I say magic now. but yeah, that this person, whatever it is, who is asking her that question knows that there's more about her than just being a kid.
Yeah.
But it's honestly, I don't really know what to think. They kept it quite open on purpose, I think, right? So we don't even find out. So, yeah, maybe like a goddess or something like that, you know, like a higher power, even higher than she is right now. Because for me right now, Ciri feels like one of the most powerful human beings or people on planet Earth or whatever it is, you know, so that's how I feel.
I almost feel like it was not so much her subconscious, but maybe like a special place where they brought her, obviously, like kind of similar to what they do in other shows where it's almost like awakening someone and like allowing them to really feel the full potential of what they can do. And it's almost like a way of whoever this is to guide her toward the light, to guide her toward her power, and to, you know, kind of, you know, not to use a Star Wars reference, but
do it.
Almost like,
just do it.
Almost like Force ghosts and like how there's like a guide there from the beyond. I almost feel like that's what we're seeing right now, and that she is, I don't think that she's gonna forget who she is. I don't think that anything could take that away from her. I think she's too strong.
Everyone in the chat is calling her Ciri the Banshee. Everyone thought that she, because of her scream is so...
Oh, I like that.
Like, because everyone is calling her a Banshee because that scream is crazy.
Like, blood-curdling.
Mm. It's like spine-tingling.
Yeah.
But worse than the mother, too.
Yeah.
Maybe that question is on purpose, obviously, just to ask her directly, hey, who are you or what are you, to find out herself who she really is.
Yeah.
I think that's basically the bottom line.
Yeah, you know, so. Absolutely. So let's segue into everything going on with Yennefer this episode, because we had a lot. First of all, it was a 30-year jump. I was not expecting that.
Right.
But when we got to her, I was trying to figure out, okay, 30-year jump, does that mean that we're now in Geralt's timeline, or like, you know, where we're seeing him, or probably not, because that was, at that point, it was probably only 15 years. So I was trying to figure out, like, if we're up to the present now, like, where we're seeing with Princess Cirilla, or what. But in any case, we got a lot with Yennefer, and we got to see her transportation portal skills.
Yes. That was the coolest part of this episode for me. It was like, man, you can finally see her at work. She was, you know, in this carriage as doing her job as mage. And, you know, she's helping her, the prince or the queen or whatever, jump through all these portals, escape the assassin. And it was just like so cool to see her using her powers for what she was made for, basically.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. But at the same time, she was feeling, I mean, I didn't, she was not content at all.
No.
Yeah. Katie, how did you feel about those opening scenes with Callus and the baby before we even got to the assassination attempt?
Wait, what scene? Sorry.
So when we first saw Yennefer again, and they're in the carriage.
The carriage, right. Okay, that's what I thought you meant.
And, like, we hadn't even seen the knives yet. It was just seeing Yennefer. Mm. She just didn't look happy.
No, she definitely didn't. And she definitely had that, like, look of, I'm someone's servant. I'm, like, of service to someone else. I'm not in control of what I want to use my magic for.
Yeah.
And so you can tell that she's not happy because she's probably been doing this for 30 years and she's probably also bored. I think she's also bored because she's just like, oh, I got to go with her everywhere and make sure nothing happens to her help protect her. And
probably at that point, not much had happened to her.
Yeah.
So it was probably just like kind of a boring job, you know, of her just like watching this, like probably kind of ditzy girl just like bop around with her babies, you know, and she was just like, you know, I need to do more than this. She was probably so bored.
Yeah.
But a good thing is at least she didn't age at all.
I know.
I was like, respect for that.
Yeah.
And that's another question is like, you know, how is her aging process going to be?
Yeah.
Because in our last episode for the news, we had talked about how she starts off playing someone in her teens and goes into her 70s, right?
Yeah.
So I'm curious if she's going to look exactly the same in her 70s or if they age her up at all. But at this point, I think that how I was feeling was with, you know, she ditched, well, I don't want to say ditched, but she broke up with Eastrid so that she wouldn't live this life where she felt like she was doing mundane tasks. Yeah. And she gave up her ability to have children. And I'm guessing she had to kind of help raise Callis because this is 30 years later. And now Callis has her own child. And so she's doing exactly what she can't do, which is be, you know, I guess a surrogate mother in a sense to other people and not doing much more. Like the ending of the last episode, I expected that she was going to go on to be this great, you know, like powerhouse, and she's in a carriage assisting someone.
I mean I'm male obviously, right? So I can't really like give birth to a baby, but I feel like for a female, like for a woman, that must be a very hard thing, right? If you want to have a child now, seeing as you serve someone else who has a child and you can't do it anymore. I just felt like that must be tough, right? I mean, tell me about it.
Yeah, and not just one child. Like, she's seen this girl give birth to many girls.
Many kids, because they say, you know, girls.
A bunch of girls, and she's probably like, man, this girl just has baby after baby, and it's just like, I have to protect her, and she's an idiot.
And we see that. Like, we see, like, Callis at first seemed pretty, you know, pretty kind toward her, but as we're seeing them run, like, we do see that there's an assassination attempt. Yennefer figures it out. She's trying to save her, but then as she's jumping from place to place, and, you know, the assassin keeps following them with, I guess, that arachnid, the spider,
whatever it was.
As they're not getting away, suddenly Callis turns on Yennefer.
Yeah.
I was like, what is she doing? How could she do this? Like, that is the dumbest thing she ever did. Why would you insult the one person who can save you?
Because, again, she's an idiot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, she can't, like, this person is saving your life. And also at that scene where she, like, gives up her baby and, like, take the baby and save me, you know, like, come on. Come on. Be a better person than that. Everyone is saying that immortality, so Grayson says immortality was the trade-off for Yennefer's transformation. Her and the Witcher are going to age in the same way, kind of like Wolverine. They don't really.
Yeah, okay.
Gotcha.
Just FYI.
That makes sense. Okay, good to know. Thank you.
Well, and also we already know that the Witcher's already aged 10 years from the beginning because the Bard makes a comment about saying like how long they've known each other.
And I know that Geralt along the way had said, you know, he had seen so many things happen. So I got the sense that he was not really going to age.
They look good.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I know.
I want to be in that world.
So, okay. Eventually, we had that whole scene where I knew it was the end when Callis said, save me. Here's the baby.
Yeah.
I'll give him a son, I promise.
First of all, you can't promise that. I don't know if there's, you know.
And it's the male's job to determine the sex of the baby, by the way. If anybody of you guys don't know that. Male is the one that determines the sex of the baby.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So don't be getting mad at her. It's your fault, King.
Okay, so what do I have to do? How does that work?
So, I think the saddest scene for me, though, was so we see Yennefer leaves after Callis insults her.
Yes.
Eventually, Yennefer goes back, grabs the baby, but the baby gets caught up in it as Yennefer's leaving. And I think that, for me, the most touching scene was at the end where Yennefer was talking to the baby saying, hey, you actually are lucky you didn't have to live in this world. You're a girl. It would have been even harder for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was one of, like, the more beautiful scenes. And especially it was, like, on a beautiful beach and, like, when she comes out of the water, I was like, oh, she did save the baby. And then you look and it's, and she's blue and it's, yeah, it's sad. And you finally get a touching moment from Yennefer, you know, like she actually does have a heart.
Yeah.
Instead of this like powerful sorceress. Rah, she's like an actually, you know, a kind hearted woman, and she buries the baby and gives it a proper burial that it deserves, you know?
Yeah. And doesn't sacrifice a child, even if it's not, it wasn't even her child.
It wasn't her child. The mom sacrificed her own baby, which is so gnarly.
Yeah. And I had hoped, like, I almost hoped that the baby would live so that she, like, I feel like it might have been destiny for.
I can do this now.
We had a break. We're okay now.
For her to end up with a child, even though she can't have children, it felt fitting.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, fate was, you know.
You would have liked to see her raising the kid?
I would have.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. I like that.
Yeah,
that's
especially cool. Because, like, as hard.
She wants it so bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. And somebody who has been through that kind of treatment, who's been through so much trauma.
Yeah.
I feel like people like that can sometimes be better parents because they understand the harsh, you know, realities of life. And I mean, not always, obviously that doesn't, that's not always the case, but I feel like, you know, with Yennefer, it might have made it easier for her to have a child because she's experienced so much.
Yeah. I totally agree on that. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Totally. So, okay, with the time we have left, let's jump into our special segments.
Yeah.
We have got our Spotlight production.
Woo! Okay, so our Spotlight production, we do different...
I was expecting something. All
we've
right.
never had a sound effect. Look at us. So right. we spotlight the cool production aspects of the show, because like makeup and fight scenes and all that stuff. And I figured in this episode... The craziest thing was all the cool scenery that we experienced. So Ryan's going to put some images up on the screen. Like, that one's one of my favorite, most beautiful shots, the desert. And then there are so many places that she portals to. And then even the scene of the forest, you know, the forest was just so magical. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about the locations that they shot in. The creators of The Witcher had scoured Europe in search of the perfect filming locations for the drama to unfold. Here are some of the cities and landscapes that they chose. The first one was Budapest, Hungary. Hungary's capital has been used for much of the filming, it was revealed. The announcement was received warmly by the fans, as it suggests that the show will retain the heavy Eastern European influence it was originally created with. Another spot is... I'm going to butcher this name, but Rabstin, Poland. It's news that some of the new series would be shot in Poland has, of course, delighted fans from the author's home nation, where the novels were immensely popular long before the video game came out. And then another place is the Canary Islands in Spain. One of the show's directors, Charlotte Brandstrom, took to Instagram with a photo of sunny the Canary Islands, La Palma, announcing it would be in the mix. So just those are some of the places that they shot. But I just thought in this episode especially, all the scenery was just so beautiful and just so well shot. I just like, you know, it's nothing better than that, basically.
I can confirm I've been there. Actually. Yeah. Oh, it's beautiful. I've been to the Gran Canaria. It's like, oh, guys.
Yeah. Seriously, it's a good spot. Really,
yeah.
I should go back to Europe. What am I doing? I know. Sorry, kidding.
So yeah, everything was mostly shot in Europe, but they did a beautiful job.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, because I know we've mentioned this before, but the books, you know, obviously the writer is Polish. They were published in Poland first, and the books have been translated from Polish. So it's interesting to, you know, see the locations, especially, you know, some of the more like, you know, European spots. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's jump to our news segment.
AfterBuzz TV News.
All right, so the news today is an article that was from The Wrap, where Henry Cavill is talking about his voice. So a lot of people, when they're watching shows like this, are always kind of curious why the actor made the decisions they made regarding their dialect and their accent. He said, mythology, and we all know he's a huge fan of the book, so it's his character is... He wants his character to be the best as it can be. He said, mythology-wise, there are a lot of changes from the books, and there is only so much that can be done. And for me, as a performer in the show, it was my job to bring my performance, and everyone else was allowed to bring performances separately. Yes, there is in the book, certainly, a Rivian accent. For me, and then later on he says, for me, it wasn't about necessarily... It wasn't about necessarily giving Geralt a specific accent, which was different from everyone else's, because that would be impossible. And he goes on to talk about how in the UK, there are so many dialects, it's impossible for not to have eventually run into someone with the same accent. Mm. He said, so for me, it was about bringing a voice to Geralt, which was expressing essence of who he is in the books, and bringing that to the space and the format that was allowed within the show. So awesome. From that, I kind of took, he kind of pulled from different things.
Yeah. And it is very noticeable because I can hear a British accent, yeah. but at the same time, it's very unique.
Yes.
Yeah. There's nothing, like, it feels very fantasy-esque.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, yeah.
And even though he doesn't say much, you know, he does a lot of,
Yeah, exactly, right? I love that part. I was like, what are you trying to tell me now?
But even that, like, I feel like sometimes with series like this, I feel like it's almost like you're hearing the book.
Yeah.
Because in the book, there's a lot of that. Great. And in fantasy books in general, there's a lot of that. So it feels very genre specific to me.
I mean, I used to live in the UK for a couple of years, right? I mean, he doesn't sound anyone from London, obviously, but also not from Manchester or Liverpool.
But I'm sure if you hear certain words, you'll think, oh, this sounds like that accent. This word sounds like that.
Yeah, I can tell it's British in a way, but I don't know. It doesn't sound posh British or something like the other people on the show, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. Absolutely.
But I just like the care that he put into how he prepped this character.
Yeah.
Like, we all know he loves the books, he loves the video game and all that stuff. And, like, all actors do research. I mean, I'm not an actor, but I know this. Like, they do research for their roles. But I like that he puts that care into it.
Yeah.
So you know that not only is he trying to please himself as a fan, but also make sure that the rest of his fans have the same experience with it.
And Ivan says Geralt has an American accent in the games, which is interesting.
Oh,
that,
really?
They have a difference.
Huh. Oh, okay.
And just saying, just throwing it out there, but Henry Cavill has an amazing American accent that he does too.
Yeah.
So he's just an accent guy. Like, that's just
the best guy at everything.
And I just want to make
we got it, Olivia.
Just the best guy at everything.
God, people.
Just everything.
So that about wraps up our show for today. Katie, where can everybody find you?
You guys can find me on Twitter and Instagram at KT_Christine. Also on other shows here at AfterBuzz, Batwoman at 10:10 on Sunday nights, and on The Con Guy on Monday at 10:10 p.m.
I'm at Olivia Di Bortoli on Twitter, on Instagram, all the fun places. Also, I'm on the Arrow After Show, only 2 episodes left. And I'll be, if you comment on the video, I'll be in the comments and I'm on the chat.
Awesome, yeah. My name is Benjamin Schnau, right? On Instagram and Facebook. Yeah, the German, I know, okay. But I'm also going to do The World According to Jeff Goldblum right after this show, so tune in.
Awesome, and I'm Rachel Goodman. You can find me on Twitter, at Rachel Goodman, or on my author Instagram account, at Rachel Radner Author. You can also catch me on Sundays on the Young and the Restless After Show. I'm also on the Ray Donovan After Show. I'm joining Doctor Who, and on Wednesdays, I will be on the Stumptown After Show, so you'll see me around. we'll be back later tonight to talk about episode 5 and 6.
5 and 6.
Ooh. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone. Thank you.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.